Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Thank you for joining us, and hey, thanks for tuning in throughout the week on our website, podcast, and YouTube channel to keep up to date with the volatile markets, and especially volatile commodities markets that we have been experiencing over the last couple months. First half of this show, we're going to be really jumping around a lot of different sectors, getting our generalist take on things and the direction that a wide range of sectors are going. And in the back half of this show, we're focusing a bit more on the precious metals and even copper sector down into the equities. Kicking off the show with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, that's read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. On the retail and individual side, check out the In the Know Trader website. I'll post that in the show notes. Rick has three products, a monthly report called the 7-Eleven, where he picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the S&P, a weekly report called the Tactical Trader Report, and a daily report called the Daily Tip Sheet that was started more recently. So Rick, thank you for joining us. Let's start off with U.S. equity markets, S&P, NASDAQ, they're right back to all-time highs. Dips are shallow and being bought very quickly. The Dow, though, it's lagging those other two markets. What's your take on the markets and, again, the S&P and NASDAQ kind of leading the way?
Well, look, you've got certain names in the S&P and NASDAQ that aren't all in the Dow. And let's take NVIDIA, for instance, which has just started another leg higher over the last week or so, week and a half. And that's not in the Dow. It's not one of the 30 names. And therefore, you're going to see underperformance relative to some of the mega caps that are leading the S&P and the Qs higher. So it's part of it is just the compilation of the different component names. And look, the reality is that other than the evening news, which tells you what the Dow did, Wall Street in general, professional money managers don't care about the Dow. It's not an index that they're benchmarked to. So the Dow stays forefront in the public's mind, mostly because that's what the news reports most days. But the reality is it's really the S&P 500 that is the benchmark, that is what people should be looking at. And despite the fact that the Mag 7 names represent 30% of the entire S&P index, just 7 out of 500 names represent 30%. So it has its own inherent problems, how it's calculated, just like every other index. It is really the one to be paying attention to. So it's not a surprise that the Dow is trailing. It doesn't have the names that is actually pushing the market higher.
Well, Rick, just to that point, when you think about the weighted indexes, they are so skewed to those tech mega cap stocks, the leadership. When you look at underneath the market breadth, like you say, the other 493 companies out of the S&P 500, or when you look at the Russell 2000 and the small caps, or just the market breadth, what other patterns are you seeing under the surface that may be different than the weighted indexes?
Well, look, you've got the Russell, which so many portfolio managers were mega bullish on to start the year. And it's trailed because rates have been higher up until recently. And we'll get to rates, and I'll tell you how and why I turned bullish at 4.6% and said that was the last time you're going to have a chance to buy bonds at that type level for this cycle. But if you think rates are headed lower, despite the fact that today rates have a good pop because of the employment numbers, but if you think in general rates have peaked and they're going lower, then you're probably going to want to have some exposure to Russell 2000 names because lower rates will help that index and it'll play catch up to some degree. Do I think it necessarily is a pair trade that you buy Russell and sell S&P? I can't make that case yet, just simply because NVIDIA and possibly even Apple, which is now for the third time in the mid-190s, it could break out to the upside here. You've got a double bottom and two tops in Apple at this level. And now a third time, you've got WWDC early next week. So if Apple surprises with some good news above and beyond whatever people are looking for, you could get another leg up in Apple. And you're not going to want to fight the S&P itself. But for broad-based participation, you probably want to get into some, have some Russell exposure in general, especially if you think rates are heading down to 4% or even possibly lower.
Let's talk rates then, because look, the bond market, the 10-year, in all fairness, has been in a way kind of range bound for almost a year now. But fact of the matter is, maybe we did have that peak when the 10-year almost hit 5% again. Plus, on the back end of that, we had some rate cuts out of the Bank of Canada, the ECB, a so-called hawkish rate cut. Fact of the matter is, we're starting to get some rate cuts out of some bigger central banks. Will the U.S. follow suit? Is the market right to start pricing those in?
Well, I don't know if our Fed is going to cut rates this year. I've been in the camp for this entire year that the market had it wrong when they had priced in 7 cuts for 2024 in January. And I said I saw 2 to 3 at best for this year. And then by early spring, I said it could be 1 or none. And I still stick in that camp of 1 or none. In my view, and I called this in real time in April when the U.S. 10-year got to 4.74%, I told clients both on the institutional side and for In the Know Trader clients, the individual investor newsletter that I write, that if you're in the camp that yields are not going to hit 5% this year, then this is where you want to buy bonds. At 4.72 was my level. So they got to 2 bips higher for the intraday high. I called for a 30 basis point decline down to about 4.43. We got that. We dipped 10 bips below that. We then rallied again into late. And you guys saw this because you get my institutional report. I said there'd be one last chance to buy bonds when yields got up to 4.55 to 4.65. And they got to, I think it was 4.64 or 4.63 on the peak a week and a half ago. I personally bought the largest bond position I ever have when we got to that 4.6 level. And again, we're bouncing today from support at in the upper 4.2s, but I think we're headed to 4.21 to 4.13 fairly in the near term. We'll see those levels over the summer. And I think rates have peaked for this cycle. And here, I'll give you an interesting tidbit. Give or take a month ago, I met one of my large institutional clients, a fixed income portfolio manager. We went out to, I took him out to dinner. And rates were, I don't know, a month ago, let's call them 4.5, something like that at the time. And I said to him, I asked him the question, what odds would you assign that the U.S. 10-year gets beneath 4% this year? And he said, 80% chance. And I said, no, I'm talking about what are the odds that get under 4%? And he says, no, Rick, 80% chance. And I was stunned. I really thought he was going to be kind of 10, 20, 25%. Some chance, but not likely. This is a guy who does not trade equities or anything else but bonds. And he runs a $20 billion bond fund. And I was very surprised. But here's a guy who makes his living, knows everything there is to know about the bond market. And it's telling me 80% chance bond yields are going under, the 10-year is going under 4% this year. I was so surprised. And yet it's really helped solidify my view that yields are likely going lower. And what I'm able to do is, as your listeners know and you guys know, is I do something that is said can't be done, which is time the market. So I've put out 2 bond buys this year, one at 4.72%. and one at 4.59%. Those are the 2 peaks in yields this year. And I do think that rates are headed lower. I can't say they go crashing under 4% in the next few months. But in simple terms, think about this just for those who understand price movement and the way markets often work. If the peak at 5% last year is going to stay not just a cyclical high, but potentially a secular high for this, let's call it phase. So I'm content in calling it a cyclical high. We went from 5% down to, what was it, 3.79, if I remember, was the low in yields at the very end of last year. So that's 121 basis points. If the high we just made at 4.74 is the reaction high, then we have another leg down that I can measure 121 basis points from that high at 4.74. So that gets you down to what, 4.53. I do my math, 3.53. So let's just say in round numbers, I can make a decent case that we're going down to 3.5%. And I'm not sure for the timing, but if I'm right, we're not going to take out the highs that we just saw this year, the double, the April high or the May high, before we end up going as low as roughly 3.5%. That's the camp, and that's the way I'm approaching the market right now. So I would take advantage of a day like today, where yields are up sharply and back into somewhat towards the middle of the range that they've been in over the last couple months, I would be buying bonds and taking advantage of bounces in yields. So right now, the 10-year is at 4.42 as we record this. Today's intraday high was 4.43. So we're certainly close enough that, and anywhere from here up to about, I'd say 4.52 is the place you again want to be buying bonds for a move down that right now targets 4.21 to 4.13, just in the near term. And then again, the bigger move suggests something like 3.5%.
Well, Rick, just to follow up on that, we've had, and I understand the messages you have there, that you think that bonds are going higher and that the rates could keep pulling back, maybe below 4 all the way down to 3.53. So that's the cycle terms you're looking at. But we've had some guests on the show that have mentioned they think that the bond bubble that went for roughly 4 decades burst in 2020 when rates got all the way down to 0.4%, as people will remember, and that maybe they'll have a decade or two of higher rates, you know, rates higher for possibly a long period of time. What do you think of that argument that the bond bubble burst and that bonds may be under pressure with obviously spikes and drops along the way, but that they may be under pressure for decades?
I think that's probably right. I'm not opposed to that at all. I do think the 40, and I've said it on your show in the past, the 40-year cycle of being bullish bonds is over. And ultimately, you're going to want to play for higher yields, which means bonds deserve a much smaller portion of your overall portfolio. But it's all about time frame and whether or not you're in any way trading. Are you trading short term? Are you trading medium term? Are you investing long term? And where do you make those decisions is all about how you do relative to underlying benchmarks. If you're 60 or 65, 70 years old, and you want to have exposure to bonds, I get it. You want to have some mildly reduced exposure to equities, though, despite the fact that equities keep doing well. And for the longer term now, I think bonds will not do well. I can make much better decisions, and I probably will be much more about cleaning out a fair amount. And I'm in that age category. I'm 65. So I'm supposed to be at the point in life where I reduce my equity exposure and I put more into bonds. I get that. But it's about where and when you do it and the time frames you have in mind. I will probably, whatever bonds I have bought recently, I will probably dump them out near 3.5%, and that's it. I will be very careful about what type of fixed income exposure I have over time and may very well keep them much shorter term in duration. I'm a big fan. Now that you actually get yield from the U.S. government, which last many years you've gotten virtually nothing, now that you're actually getting some yield, I don't mind using treasurydirect.gov, that website, which lets you buy directly from the U.S. Treasury. Any person can Do it as little as, I think, $1,000 increments, and you can buy 3-month T-bills and 6-month and 1 year. And you can buy notes, treasury notes, starting past 1 year, and so on. If we get down to 3.5, I'm more in the camp that I want to keep my money short term. And I don't want to be owning long term paper at that point, because I'm in agreement with some of your other guests who think the cycle is done. And we're talking about the 40-year big cycle is done. And yields will probably find some equilibrium point higher than even where they are now over time. I just think in the next 6 months or more, is it possible it happens by years? And I'm not sure. I don't think we get to 3.5 in 2024. When we get down there, then yeah, I walk away from that whole idea of owning bonds for the long term. And I go shorter term in duration for what I want to have is guaranteed money. I stay liquid. And if depending upon the yield curve, the short end of the yield curve, it gives you more than the long end anyway. You have an inverted yield curve. So there's a lot to be said about taking advantage of that inverted yield curve when I think this bond rally will end somewhere, at least minimally, in that 3.5% range.
Okay. Hey, Rick, portfolio management from a trader's perspective too, right? Not just getting all in on one side of the trade and just letting it run forever. You're seeing an opportunity in the bond market in terms of yields going a bit lower. Let's carry it over to commodities, because boy, oh boy, have commodities sure been volatile. Precious metals have been volatile. Silver, especially. Copper went up in May to an all-time high and then immediately reversed. Let's start with the precious metals. Gold and silver's volatility right around that key $30 level. How are you viewing silver?
So it's funny. I put out a buy in silver for today when I wrote the daily tip sheet last night, but it was caveated that should we have a large gap up or large gap down this morning because of the employment numbers coming out, I wasn't going to put the trade on. And certainly with how silver is trading today, it's down significantly. Gold's down $61 right now. It's getting mushed. I think for the bigger picture, I'm still a net buyer of precious metals on pullbacks. Now, recently I sold half of my GLD. I have different ways I own gold, both in GLD, the largest ETF that tracks the price of gold bullion. But I also own GDX, which are the miners, and I own actual individual mining names. As far as GLD itself, I sold out of half my GLD at 222 and change a few weeks ago. And actually, I'm buying some of that back today. Let's see, where's the low got down to 213 today. And I know I had a bid in the 213 level to buy back half of what I had sold at 222. So near term, I don't mind playing. I've held gold for years, but I had a real good reason to sell GLD up near the test of the highs, which was, in hindsight now, a good sale, and buying some of it back now. And the other half, I'll have to look to see where I bid for the other ones. I do want to own gold and silver for the long term. Silver I've had in my portfolio for years. It's been a non-performer for a long time, actually a loser for a long time. I think I bought it in 2011. So it's gone. It has not helped me at all over that time. And I've seen far more drawdown in it than I have had profits, but now it's finally profitable. So if I remember correctly, my SLV position is long somewhere in the 24 handle. So it's still making money now. You get a day like today where it's really getting rocked, and never happy to see a big loss like this on any single day. 5% losses, almost 6% down today. Not a good thing, but in the bigger picture, I do like the metals. And the reason, besides the fundamentals of the metals themselves and why I'm bullish, is I think the dollar is going to fall right now, and for months already, we're in the phase where the dollar has generally been moving in tandem with U.S. rates. And because I think rates are headed lower, I think the dollar's likely headed lower over time also. in this mini cycle. And therefore, the dollar weakness that I think is coming in the next 6 months will likely be a boost for the precious metals too. So I'm a fan of them. I don't think silver's going back to test all-time highs of $50, not a chance, or at least no reason I can come up with why it would do that now. But in general, I think you want to take a look at the precious metals and find places to be buyers of them. And shameless plug here, this is something we look at all the time in the weekly tactical trader report. Every week, I'm always updating everybody about my opinion on bond rates and the dollar, gold, and oil. Those are just, besides the S&P, those are just standard. So if you like the perspective I bring, there's a report that comes out weekly that'll always keep you in the loop what's going on in the metals markets and where positions are.
Rick, I appreciate you weighing in on the precious metals, how you're looking at it, how you're playing it. And I would like to ask you about one more metal, and that's copper. Dr. Copper is seen as the health of the economy. It had a wild ride higher in May and actually made a new all-time high, was up around $5.20 a pound. Never seen that level before, but it immediately reversed. So some are pointing to that being just a short squeeze, but there are a lot of fundamental drivers in copper, such as China, electrification of the world, all the AI data centers that are going to be needed, EV charging stations. So it's a topical metal. A lot of our listeners look at copper and copper stocks. How are you seeing the red metal?
So right now, copper is trading about $4.50 using US COMEX copper pricing, not London metal. And I'd say, so 2 weeks ago, I wrote about looking for traders to short copper. It made a new cyclical high above the February 22 highs, only to fail instantly. But I think if you're looking to be a buyer and you're talking about some of these fundamental reasons that you think copper may go up, then a pullback to what was a cyclical high, which was January of 23, that's about $4.35. And I've got something else down at 425. So there you go. I've got about a 10 cent range between 435 and 425 that you look to buy the metal itself. If you're looking to buy copper related names, then I would probably buy those close to when this hits those targets I'm talking about. So with it trading at 4.5 now, you talk about another, I don't know, what, 4% to 6% lower, something like that is where I would nibble. And in doing that, you're going to break the uptrend line that you have off of this year's bottom. And that's actually, I don't mind buying broken trend lines because those who are leaning against them tend to get stopped out, and I'll buy when others are like weak-handed longs are puking out. So that's my general range for now, 4.35 to 4.25 basis COMEX copper.
All right. That's pretty straightforward there. So still maybe a little bit of weakness, but boy, oh boy, May was sure a wild month for copper. What about Bitcoin too, Rick? Bitcoin is back right around some of those all-time highs, right around that 71,000 level, just under that today. Bitcoin's always volatile, so we can just leave that for what it is. But in terms of Bitcoin and the potential price moves, what are you seeing?
Well, right now we actually have a bullish Bitcoin position on from the daily tip sheet. We got in, I don't remember, a week and a half ago, something like that, right after it had bounced on some support at 68,000 or so. So we bought, I put out a buy recommendation in IBIT, which is now the most commonly traded ETF for Bitcoin. It's the most liquid, and I'm certainly going to want to be in a liquid one for that. So we've actually hit a near-term target at, let's see what this price is, 72,330 basis Bitcoin futures themselves. And I look at Bitcoin futures as my proxy for Bitcoin. But if we get a couple closes above, and then we can build a base on top of that 73,000 number, then you're talking about 78 to 80,000 as next target on the upside. So that would be new all-time highs. This is something I only would trade. I have a very small position in Bitcoin that I bought, you know, a few years back, but I don't use this as an investment vehicle. Some people do, but I don't like being in investments that regularly move 20 to 50% up and down like nothing. So I still put this in the camp of a highly speculative type of thing to play. And despite those who think they really understand the fundamentals and that you keep having a dwindling amount of Bitcoin available, which I understand that thinking and why Bitcoin needs to increase in value over time, it's just not something that I'm willing to put any substantial amount of money in. So I'll trade it, but it's not, it hasn't gotten to me the, doesn't have the reputation of a type of investment vehicle that I want to deal with, because you got to watch it all the time. And I don't want to have to do that with long-term investments. Your long-term investments should not be regularly moving 20, 30, 40, 50% up and down a couple times a year.
Yeah, fair enough. That's Bitcoin though for you. That's cryptocurrencies. That's why some people like to trade them, but it's just interesting to see those, or Bitcoin at least, also back too close to those all-time highs. Rick, we'll wrap it up here though. Very interesting comments. I really appreciate you sharing your trading strategy with us. Again, it's just taking a look at some of these charts, playing the swings that you see. And quite frankly, on this show, you have been playing these swings very well. I do appreciate all of the insights you have provided with us pretty much on a monthly basis. So Rick, thank you for your time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of June and we'll chat again in July.
Thanks guys. Thanks for having me.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.